This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and have we got a great show for you tonight? No, we don't. Damn it. The phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, east of the Rockies. Hey, breather, what's going on, man? Your vision is blurry, and you're worried that self-gratification has made you go blind? Oh, man, that's terrible. I sure hope not. What do you mean you were hoping to lose your hearing instead so that you wouldn't have to listen to our shitty podcast? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on? Shebop by Cyndi Lauper? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Shebop by 80s new wave icon Cyndi Lauper. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
America, demand your MTV! I want my MTV!
I want my MTV!
I want my MTV!
MTV, music, television, video, music, 24 hours a day, and it's stereo.
Hello, baby, make it hurt so good.
Call your cable company and say, I want my MTV!
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching? I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got Rico Rather on the line. Seven-time Silver Sow Award winner, bringing us some news. Rico, what's happening?
What is up, Mr. Scotty? How's it going tonight?
Well, dude, I'm ready for some rock and roll news. I'm jonesing for it. You know, MTV, stop doing the news. Where am I going to get my rock and roll news?
I know. How do you... Is that like... That's like... I don't think people under the age of really 40 or 45 are ever going to understand the significance of that. But that's kind of a big deal, right?
For Gen Xers who grew up on MTV and grew up with Kurt Loder and the Peace Cells baseline bringing in our news, we loved it. That's how we kept up with what was going on in the world. The news that mattered. But now we've got Rico Rather.
True. I mean, one more real quick on that. And MTV News was super cool and really freaking informative. And Kurt Loder really took that shit really seriously. And he was fantastic, man. And that was phenomenally informative. And I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to watch that for as long as I did. So RIP MTV News, right? First item, we've talked about Billy Corgan before from the Pumpkins. I think Billy Corgan likes himself a little too much, Billy Corgan, if you know what I mean. So in his latest, you know, before when he was talking about, you know, the new platform and how people are doing whatever they have to do to get their music out and how he thinks that's bullshit and you're not a real artist if you don't put albums out and all this other kind of lofty, elevated shit, right? So now he's talking about Kurt Cobain and how he was really, really upset when Kurt Cobain died. And he said, I want to read this quote, it's kind of lengthy, but I have to read this to put this in context, right? He says, I want the pumpkin standing on top of the heap of our generation, he said. If that means I got to write 800 songs to do it, I'll do it. I ain't shy about that. Then he said, I will go down always as saying Kurt Cobain was the most talented guy of our generation. Kurt had, do you agree with that, by the way? Before I go on? Okay. Think about it. Kurt had so much talent, it's like frightening. It was like a John Lennon level of talent. I don't know about that. Where you were like, how can you have all of this talent? Or Prince, right? Now we need to tap the brakes a tad. But Kurt's not here, sadly. So I looked around. I was like, all right, well, I could beat the rest of them for sure. While it seems like Cobain was set the bar in Corgan's eyes, he revealed that things felt different after the singer's passing in 84. When Kurt died, I cried because I lost my greatest opponent. What the fuck is he talking about? I want to beat the best. I don't want to win the championship because it's just me and a bunch of jabronis, to use a wrestling term. It's like Michael Jordan, arguably the greatest sports competitor I'll ever see in my lifetime. I mean, you want to talk about an alpha. That guy wanted to win the valet tip. You know what I mean? What the fuck is he talking about? Is this a I didn't know that making music was a competition like this. Help me out here.
I can't help you out because my brain doesn't work this way. I hate when we turn music into sports. I mean, I don't know. I'm not Billy Corgan. I'm not in that arena. Maybe these guys need that juice to like get going. I don't know, but okay, there's a lot to unpack there. For one thing, Billy Corgan looks at the 90s, which I thought was an incredibly fertile, creative time for rock and roll. Really the last great decade for rock and roll. There was so much creative, artsy, druggy, psychedelic. It was just like a Jackson Pollock painting of music. I mean, it was just so creative and out there, right?
All kinds of different genres of music that are just coming hot and heavy with super great material.
So Billy Corgan looks around at all of that and says, I'm superior to all of this. It's only me and Kurt Cobain who sit atop of all of this creativity and all of these great albums by all of these great artists. I mean, there are so many great rock records in the 90s. Just look at 1991 alone. We've done that on this podcast. We've talked about that year. I'm not going to go through it again. You have Google for that, but it's just amazing to me that a person would look at a decade that was so fruitful creatively and just look around and be dismissive of it and say, just me and this other guy were the only things worth a shit in this decade. Everybody else was just a bunch of also-rans that they're just shit on my shoe. You know, they're beneath me. Holy cow. I mean, I love the Smashing Pumpkins, and I think Billy Corgan is a prolific songwriter. So let's unpack that, okay? And then there's this idea of Kurt Cobain being the most talented figure of the decade. And I love me some Nirvana, but I have a problem with that. And I wonder if because of his departure, if posthumously we're attaching greatness to him that we seem to do with people who leave us too soon, right? And I wonder if some of that is being kind of affixed to him. He never stuck around long enough to make a bad record. And other people have, including Billy Corgan. Okay. And so he leaves with an unblemished record creatively. But if he was turning, like, it's funny we're talking about this because Chris Novoselic today turned like 57, 58 years old, the bass player in Nirvana. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Kurt Cobain would be in that window now age-wise. And surely in the last 30 years, he'd have wrote a dud or two somewhere along the way, right?
It happens all the time.
Comparing him to Prince? Oh, my gosh.
Prince and John Lennon. But I mean, chew on that for a minute.
Prince can play any instrument you put in front of him, and Cobain could barely master the guitar. Not that that matters, but I mean, Cobain was a brilliant songwriter, but I just don't know that I would say he was up there at like a John Lennon level. And I'm not trying to get killed by Nirvana fans. I see our numbers. I know that when we talk about Nirvana, people listen, but I I struggle with that a little bit. I love Cobain as a songwriter. I love him as a performer. I love Nirvana, but I struggle with this idea that he was unassailable, you know, that he possessed this superior songwriting ability far and away beyond that of his peers. I would say that the other grunge bands that were big at that time were pretty much equal to or shoulder to shoulder with Nirvana creatively. So, you know,
I mean, he's not the first guy to die too young. Okay. I think there's a couple of factors just to piggyback off what you were saying. I don't want to turn this into a Kurt Cobain episode because it's not, but the guy died way too soon at the peak of his career. Oh, and he happened to be in the 27 Club, which makes it even more mysterious and puts a little extra mystique and a little more, you know, a little more fog into it. So I think that adds to his, to the quan of Kurt Cobain. Died too soon. Didn't make a bad album. Oh, and by the way, he's a member of the 27 Club now. If one of those things don't happen, then Kurt Cobain doesn't get the quan that he gets. But what about this last part when he says, I want to win the championship because it's just me and a bunch of jabronis, to use a wrestling term? Now combine that with what he said before about how it's bullshit if you're not putting out full albums. What right. is going on in this guy's brain right now?
Well, I do think I'll defend him a little bit, partly just to play devil's advocate, but I do think he is a prolific songwriter. So in his mind, he's putting in the work, right? And when you put in the work, I don't care whether it's at your job or at the gym, you know, you in a relationship, you want acknowledgement of the fact that you're putting the time in, right? So he is a prolific songwriter. This is a guy who, if a record is going to have 12 tracks on it, he writes 50. You know what I mean? So and not all of it's gold, but he's a guy who puts in the work. So for him to look at like a non-album world where bands are just putting out singles once in a while on Spotify, to him and the way he produces content, to him, that's got to feel like, well, you're not even putting the work in, you know?
Okay.
I can
Boomer.
See it from a perspective. Does that make sense?
No, I can too, but let's take a step back, Boomer. Not you, Boomer, but Corrigan Boomer. He's acting like a boomer here when he says shit like this. So essentially what he's saying is that bands like Maneskin and Turnstile, young up and coming really good bands that make really good music, are only worth anything if they're not putting out like three back to back to back super fucking bloated concept albums like Corrigan is, right? Like if you're not putting out super bloated concept albums, then you're just not doing the work.
Well, I mean, let's be careful here. I think we're putting words in his mouth a little bit here. I'm trying to defend the perspective a little bit. I'm not saying I agree with it. Times have changed. We're kind of in a singles driven environment now. But and you know, those bands do put out records, you know, what you would consider records, 12 tracks or whatever on Spotify. But, you know, I don't want to put words in his mouth. I don't think, to my knowledge, he said you got to put out triple albums, trying to say I can see where someone who puts that much work into their craft would be put off by an environment that doesn't reward that any longer. That's all I'm saying. Those are my words, not his.
I mean, I can see that. But I think it's just a little narrow, myopic to say the types of things that he's saying. I mean, look at a guy like Nick Mason, who, when talking about Roger Waters' reimagining of Dark Side of the Moon, Nick Mason could have taken this myopic boomer approach and been like, listen, my art is my art and it should. But no, he said the opposite. He said, I think it's cool as fuck that it's getting rebooted. And I think more people should do shit like that. That's super flexible, open-minded thinking. And I feel like Billy Corgan, there's nothing wrong with him defending his work. Okay. That's okay. but at the expense of what other people are trying to do to get their work out there to begin with is maybe not the best decision, in my opinion. To what degree are you a Marilyn Manson fan?
I mean, I like some of the songs. I liked Mechanical Animals, and the one record of his I really, really like is actually a later record called The Pale Emperor. Yeah. So he's a guy that I'll check out what he's up to. I'm not crazy about the early stuff that most people love. I like I like that one later record, and I liked Mechanical Animals with all of the synthy disco stuff.
Yeah, so where I kind of am with him, I feel like he's just a little too gimmicky for me. Like, he's like, remember that dude from the 90s, Prodigy? That,
yeah,
that he did like Smack My Bitch Up. I think,
yeah, he passed away recently.
Right. Now, I like Marilyn Manson kind of like I liked Prodigy, kind of like they're okay. I appreciate them for what they are, but they're a little too gimmicky to be having like any kind of real longevity in the industry, right? Well, on the heels of his, he's was suing Evan Rachel Wood for defamation of character because of all the sexual assault stuff, right? Where a judge dismissed most of his defamation lawsuit. And so on the heels of that, Marilyn Manson is kind of hinting at he's putting out some new music. So my question to you is, knowing that he's wanting to put out some new music, do we need more music from him? I mean, it's his right, and he certainly can do whatever he wants, but does the world need more of that gimmicky, like macabre Marilyn Manson stuff? Didn't that kind of have its time in the early 2000s?
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't need it, but I don't know I don't know what his fan base looks like. Are they're aging now? So are they still into him, or have they left it behind with their JNCO jeans? You know what I mean? Well, I don't know where they're at. I personally don't need more Marilyn Manson, but you know, if he wants to make music, I'm not going to begrudge him the right to do that. You know, I think he will catch whatever hell he's going to catch, right? It'll be a little bit like Louis C.K. going out and doing comedy again, right? I mean, he's
good one.
But I mean, you're going to have to deal with the repercussions of that, right? So I think if Marilyn Manson is, because putting out a record is a public thing, you know, and you just don't put it out there and then not support it or do press for it or tour behind it. You have to support it or else it kind of doesn't exist. And so, you know, if he decides he's going to come back out into the world as something other than a defendant and as like a creative entity again, then he's going to have to deal with whatever backlash comes his way as a result of it.
Well, and do you think because of just his Marilyn Manson persona, I have the quote fingers up right now that I'm sure everybody can see, because of his Marilyn Manson quote unquote persona, do you think he has the type of personality or the wherewithal to be able to play social media in the way that you have to play social media now when you're trying to sell your music, like Metallica is successfully doing right now, believe it or not? Do you think that Marilyn Manson can do that?
Oh God. Could you imagine going into a comment section under any Marilyn Manson related post?
Exactly my point. I mean, Jesus.
I don't know, man. I mean, I think it's interesting because you talk about a persona, and I get where you're coming from with the gimmick, right? Because it's like, aren't we've kind of seen this like a million times, and hasn't it kind of like run its course, you know, the whole Antichrist stuff and the macabre kind of thing, but there's still bands doing that. I mean, Ghost has had wild success playing on this, you know, darker elements, you know, this new band Sleep Token does this theatrical dark stuff on stage. That's all Marilyn Manson is. It's vaudeville theatrics. It's just Alice Cooper on steroids. And, you know, so Alice Cooper is a guy who's in his 70s and is actually a hardcore Christian kind of right-leaning golfer. And Marilyn Manson, apparently, given his track record with his ex-girlfriends, is really the real deal. So he's actually a bad guy. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, see, and that's
not a persona.
That's my point in all of this is like dudes like Cooper and the guy from Sleep Token and the guy from Ghost. It's just a gimmick. It's just an onstage thing like Kiss, right? Like we talked about Gene Simmons earlier and how he in real life, we feel like he's not exactly who how he portrays himself. But right. But in contrast to that, Marilyn Manson really is like that is really him. You know what I mean? Like
yes.
He has bondage shit in his basement and he likes tying girls up and torturing them and shit. Allegedly. Yes. So
allegedly.
Do you think considering who he is, can he do this in today's industry? I think he's going to have a little bit of trouble.
I'm very interested to find out. And
yeah, for sure.
I mean, let's put it that way. Apparently we're going to, if he's releasing new music
yeah.
and
yep.
we'll see what he has to say. I mean, I'm guessing that with his music, it's going to be, you know, he'll come back with like basically a diss track against all of his detractors. I'm predicting that. So I will be listening very curiously about what he does.
As will I. And so having said that, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about a song that has the distinguished honor of being on the PMRC's Filthy 15. That's right. She Bop, Baby by Cyndi Lauper. So we'll be right back.
You won the D. Snyder Weekend!
Woo!
Yeah!
Nobody cleans the rock and roll out of your carpet like Stanley Steamer for carpet, wood, and tile.
Stanley Steamer gets your home cleaner!
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955, on this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted under the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm, a sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace, an eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, gang, welcome back. That's right, we're going to be talking a little bit of She Bop by Cyndi Lauper. This song was released from the album She's So Unusual in July of 1984. There's that fucking 1984 again, Scott. So many great albums came out in 1984. And before I do the little rundown, let me just give you some quick stats on just how giant this album was. It peaked at number four on the Billboard 200. It had a few singles that this album produced. This album is 16 times certified platinum. 16 times certified platinum. So this album is gigantor, okay? The B-side is Witness. So she wrote this song along with Stephen Lunt, who we'll talk about in a minute, Gary Corbett, Rick Chertoff, and who also produced it. So let's just dig right in. This album was huge. The song was huge. It's on the Filthy 15, but did it kill rock?
Thank you, Rico, for another outstanding autopsy report. Hey, gang, it's Rock and Roll Autopsy, and we've got to find out, did She Bop by Cyndi Lauper, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominee, but not inductee, kill rock and roll? To do so, we're going to use our scientific method. It's proprietary. Don't try stealing it. You can't do this podcast on your own.
No way.
I mean, don't even try.
Listen, we make it sound really easy, by the way, but it's not. Okay.
Yeah. It's basically us and Billy Corgan, and that's it. You know what I'm saying?
And a bunch of jabronis.
All right, gang. To do so, we've got five categories. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, culture vulturism. Rico, the category is gratuitous boomerism. The song She Bop by Cyndi Lauper. How do you score, sir?
I can only go as far as the obligatory 0.5. She's definitely a boomer, but she's always been really forward thinking, and her music has always been kind of forward and a little out of the box, which I've always thought was kind of cool. So I can't go any further than the obligatory 0.5.
You know, it's interesting because I got to give 0.5 because she is technically a boomer. She is not a Gen Xer. She is a youthful 69 years of age right now.
Looks great still.
Looks great. But here's the thing. We're going to talk about the subject matter of the song here shortly, but it makes me think about, we use boomerism as a derogatory term, but boomers gave us the sexual revolution. You know, was before AIDS hit, things were pretty wild and free sexually, right? And it wasn't until the Christian moralists put everybody back in the closet and told everybody to settle down in the 80s, whenever the country swung conservative again. Up until that point, it was the boomer generation that was on the streets protesting Vietnam, that was burning bras in the 70s. So this song is sexually liberating, right? And celebrating sexual liberation. And she's going to keep doing it because they haven't made it illegal yet, according to the lyrics. And so I think, can I give it a 0.5 on the, I guess, but you know what? I can't score it. I can't look at that as a negative. I'm trying to resolve this in my own brain here live as we're recording. I can't penalize the song for being open-minded sexually.
Absolutely not.
I can't do that. Well, even if that's more of where I think we're more closed-minded today than we were then.
And I think we're going back to the Eisenhower conservatism era. We're leapfrogging backwards over the sexual revolution back to before that. We're headed in that direction. But I think for us, boomerism has a negative connotation to it.
Thank you.
Your version of Cyndi Lauper's sexually liberating boomerism is actually a good thing, right? But for the purposes of our science, it's a negative connotation.
Thank you. You've helped me resolve it in my brain and find clarity and find the warm and loving embrace of science. So for me, it's going to be a 0.5. Let's move on. Mm-hmm. Category 2, excessive misogyny for She Bop. Rico, I've got the lyrics available if you need some.
I need some.
Well, I see them every night in tight blue jeans in the pages of a Blue Boy magazine. Hey, I've been thinking of a new sensation. I'm picking up a good vibration. Ooh, She Bop, She Bop. Do I want to go out with a lion's roar? Huh, yeah, I want to go south and get me some more. Hey, they say that a stitch in time saves nine. They say I'd better stop or I'll go blind. Oh, she bop, she bop. She bop, he bop, we bop, I bop, you bop, they bop, bebop, bebop, a loo bop.
Hey now.
Talk about that in a minute. I hope he will understand. She bop, he bop, a wee bop, and it goes on again. Is that enough for now, Rico?
I think I'm good. I think I'm good.
Excessive misogyny. What have you got, buddy?
Yeah, this is a song about female sexual liberation, right? So I'm going to, even though, and maybe this will kind of go into the next category, but even though this wasn't her idea to write this song, and even though it was a guy's idea to write the song, and even though the guy who suggested this drunk dialed her one night and said, you need to write a song about masturbation because nobody's doing that right now and you'd be the first one. And she's like, okay, I'll be the first one to do it. So even though all of that happened, I'm still going to give it a zero because it is a female sexually liberating song. It's very forward thinking in 1984.
Let's be honest. I mean, there's nothing interesting or taboo if it was a dude singing about playing with his junk. You know, that's just
creeper.
That's just dude stuff. That's just dudes diddling themselves and being horny. That's just dude business. There's nothing.
Water's wet, the sky is blue, and the sun's going to rise tomorrow.
What makes this song taboo in air quotes is the fact that it's a woman owning her body and owning her sexuality and being so forward and out in the open about it as a man would be, right?
Correct. And artists like what's her name that wrote Wet Ass Pussy? That song the fourth week in a row, but this is legit though. I mean, I wasn't trying to purposely work that one in, but she wouldn't, in from a certain perspective, would not have been able to write that song had Cyndi Lauper not paved the way with She Bop to a certain degree, right?
You're just making me dig up the damn splashing water sound effect that I have to insert in the timeline every time we mention wet ass pussy. So I have to get out two sound effects, the bucket of splashing water and the cat meow.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cause you extra post editing.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a zero as well for excessive misogyny. It's kind of the opposite of that. Again, it's celebrating, it's celebrating freedom for a woman to express self-gratification as I stumble over my words. Just quickly on some of the lyrics, though, as we read through the first verse, they're clever. I'm picking up a good vibration. I love the reference to I better stop or I'll go blind. The old urban legend that you'll go blind if you keep, you know, playing with your junk. Guys, we're familiar with you'd grow hair on your palms. We've heard that before, right?
Oh, sure. Hairy palms. And absolutely.
I also love, I'm a sucker for anything that references rock and roll history. I love self-referential throwback kind of things, and weaving in the she bop lyric, weaving in the I bop, you bop, they bop, bebop, bebop, a loo bop. We now have Little Richard showing up in a Cyndi Lauper song, which I just love because it just is a subtle kind of nod to Tutti Frutti, right?
Well, sure, and Elvis too, and also picking up a good vibration. That's an old Beach Boys tune. So she's referencing an old Beach Boys tune also. So I dig it, man. I dig throwing some rock reference in there. That's cool.
Yes. All right. So yeah, I'm going to score it a zero as well. Let's move on to category three, Rico. Wanton whiteness. How do you score, fine sir?
Okay. So this style of music is super duper white. You've taken, and we'll talk about it more maybe when we get to our final category, but you've taken the good, this is another example like Prince, like Darling Nikki, where they've taken the guitar out of rock and roll and they've replaced it with a synthesizer. The synthesizer riff in this song is a guitar riff. But it's just played by a synthesizer. So this is very much, if you just in your brain take the synthesizer and replace it with a guitar, it's a total rock song. But everything about this song, and the reason why she went this direction, I saw an interview where she talks about she's a big Kraftwerk fan, and she actually tried to get them to collaborate with her, but they didn't see eye to eye on the role of the vocals, and that's fine. So clearly inspired by Kraftwerk. Again, this style of music is super duper white. The subject matter kind of is multi cross generational, but I'm going to split the difference and give it a 0.5 simply because, now you know what? It's super white. They get a full one. She gets a full one on this. Who am I kidding?
You know, I actually had never listened to this entire record in my life. I was familiar with this. There's like four or five singles on it. Of course, I knew all of those. Mm-hmm. I fucking love this song. Mm-hmm. And I'm a sucker. As much as you hear me like on my, on my boomer perch bitching about the lack of like swing and music and things like that, I'm a sucker for like a dance drum beat, you know, and yes, you hear that in this song, right? And you hear the snare on this whole record. The snare drum just needs to be talked about because it is a Lars Ulrich 72 season snare in 1983. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a drumstick smacking against a sheet of paper pulled like super duper tight, right? Totally. And it is the brightest, crispiest snare. And once your brain kind of locks onto it, you can't unhear it. And because the rhythm is like a dance beat, it just repeats. And it's like, I mean, it is just and it is, and I fucking love it. And I just love this kind of music. And I really dug the record. I mean, as I'm listening to it, I'm hearing The Clash, I'm hearing Talking Heads. I mean, it's new wave, right? But it is a rock record. It is. And this is a rock song. I mean, there is, to your point, an absence of guitar, but it is a rock song. And I'm starting to talk in a circular way. So I'm going to stop. I'm going to give it a 0.5 as well. I'm going to give it a 0.5 for white artists. It is super white music, but danceable. And there's some like reggae kind of funky moments on the record, but for this song, a little darker, I'll give it a 0.5 as well. Let's move on. Got category it. 4, Malignant Machismo. Rico, how do you score?
It's going to be a 0 because any type of empowerment that she's displaying with the lyrics of this song is certainly not malignant in my opinion. So any type of machismo that she might have with writing this song is not malignant in any way, shape or form. I think it's totally cool and badass and not malignant whatsoever. So for me, this is going to be a 0.
Yeah. And I think there are nods to, aside from obviously it's a woman singing, and you alluded to the inspiration for writing the song being championed by a guy.
Yeah.
The lyrics are so goddamn clever and they let you know that the person singing this song is not in a position of power in the world. And that you understand that this person is living in the patriarchy. And let me kind of like expand on that a little bit. You know, the idea of they say I better stop or I'll go blind. Right. So this is someone who's, there's expectations that she be ladylike and behave, right? There's a certain way that society expects her to behave because of her gender, right?
Right.
And this line I absolutely love. Hey, I won't worry and I won't fret. In other words, there's a fear of like being caught. Am I doing the wrong thing? Am I going against what society's expectations of my behavior are? She says, hey, I won't worry and I won't fret. Ain't no law against it yet. Oh, she bop, she bop. I love that line because it's
great, right?
It really is, Rico. And it speaks to how kind of puritanical the world had gotten at that time. And if there were a law against it and she found herself in some Handmaid's Tale world, given her gender, she might not be able to get away with these sort of things, right? So,
right.
So you do get the sense that malignant machismo is almost impossible in the way that they've, you know, you see it in the words that she understands that what she's doing is that she may not be allowed to do what she's doing. Right.
Right. Right.
So it's just so fucking clever in the writing. And
yeah,
why the world ever had or continues to have such a stick up their ass about sex is beyond me, but
it's a great question.
I will never understand that, because it's like the more you kind of make this stuff taboo, the more people will find their
way out of their way for it. So yeah, it's a good question.
So you might as well just say, is there anything like more natural than just, I remember the first time I jerked off, Rico, it was like the heavens had opened and I heard like angels singing and I realized that I found something that I could do with myself that would bring me joy for the rest of my life. And I'm not kidding. Sometimes it's like doing a line or like shooting heroin. It's like the rush that you get. And I feel all the stress of the day leave my body into like Kleenex. And I'm like, and for a brief moment, I'm high. It's like I'm on heroin. I'm just, my mind is empty. Usually my mind is cluttered with stress and anxiety and just from freaking out. I'm just dread. And for that 1 second after
it just clears it all out, doesn't it?
It really does. I'm like,
right, without the nasty side effects that come with all the bad drugs, right? It's totally it's free of negativity.
So I'm a big advocate for beating off or whatever you got to do, man. It's all good, and thank you, Cindy Lauper. So
good,
I'm giving
soul.
I'm giving it a strong zero. So Rico, yeah, we've kind of touched on some of this earlier, or maybe yeah, I did. Culture vulturism. How do yeah, you score?
Well, clearly this song is of the time, you know, the in the peak of electronic pop music, right? Inspired by Kraftwerk, and because they wouldn't work with her, she just kind of emulated them, right? So because I know the Kraftwerk story, I feel like I need and the way this song is written and produced, I feel like I science, dude, I feel like I have to give it a 0.5. It's totally Cyndi Lauper, and totally unique. And her vocals are unlike anybody else's vocals. Like, you could pick her out of a million people, but because of the craftworkiness and because of the 80s-ness and the of the times-ness, I have to do the right thing. And I can't, I'm not going any further than a 0.5 though.
Yeah, you've totally sold me. I honestly didn't know how I was going to score or think about this, but I think you put it so well. It is definitively 80s. And, you know, I called it a dance beat. You called it like electronic drums, but that snare is just, when you hear it, you can't unhear it. And it's in every song on the record, and it's definitively 80s. You know, it's just got that thwap to it that we know from that time. And so, yeah, I think I would have to go with a 0.5 as well for culture vulturism. Rico, you ready to tally these things up and figure out what in the world happened to Shebop?
Let's do it. Let's see. So I've got 5, 1, 2. I've got a total of 2 points. What do you got?
Coming in just a smidge under, Rico, I've got 1.5 for a total of
3.5.
There you go. I mean, the science works.
Once again,
I had myself thinking when I was listening to the record, and I really did enjoy the hell out of listening to the record. I'm kind of kicking myself for not digging deeper on Cyndi Lauper in the past, but you know, she was nominated for the Rock Hall and she wasn't one of the five, right?
No, I believe not.
Yeah. And so, but it had me thinking as I was listening to the album, I don't want to digress into a Rock Hall conversation, but I do have to ask, I mean, how do you feel about it after immersing yourself in Cyndi Lauper for a week? Do you feel like they made a mistake not putting her in, or were you Hall of Fame worthy music or not?
Isn't she kind of like, well, certainly Madonna had the longevity that Cyndi Lauper did not have. Okay. Madonna was able to change her styling and her musical stylings and her physical appearance and the clothes that she wore, all that stuff in order to progress with the times. Cyndi Lauper is really just kind of the mid-80s. Right. And certainly there are artists in the hall that don't have longevity. I feel like she has made enough of an impact in the industry that I feel like one day she should be in, but not, she's not like first ballot material, I don't think, but certainly at some point she ought to be in there, because like her vocals have always been super distinctive. She's always been super forward with her songs. And listen, dude, the Goonies song, I love the movie Goonies. I love that song. I feel like one day she ought to be in. Does that make sense? I don't know if I've answered your question. What do you think?
Well, I was struggling as I was listening to it. I was just thinking, because I've had her on the brain because she was one of the nominees. Yeah. And then she didn't make the cut into the final, you know, class. And as I was listening to it, I just found myself thinking, am I hearing Hall of Fame material? You know, it's so hard to judge. It's not like baseball, right? Where you have 500 home runs and you know what I mean? It's so hard when you're talking about music to know.
How do you judge art? Right.
Right. Especially to your point is that this is MTV of a very specific time. It's those videos. It's Captain Lou Albano with the rubber bands and the goatee. You know what I mean? It's just of its time, you know? Can you penalize it for that? I don't know. It's just an interesting debate. That I wanted to get us into, but it was just kind of in my brain as I was hearing it and really appreciating and enjoying the record.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. So yeah, dude, this landed once again exactly where it should land. It's on the lower end of the scoring scale, right where it should be. So
all right, gang, well, this has been Rock and Roll Autopsy. It was a pleasure performing the autopsy with you tonight, sir. I'm gonna go masturbate. I don't know about you.
Hey, likewise, why not?
All right, gang, go beat off. Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mistake. There's no mystique anymore.
After to the dawn. Love it till the morning. I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.